Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, they never go home, they never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
On Saturday, Tyrone won the All-Ireland Football Championship, playing with a combination of grit, athleticism and an ability to score goals when it mattered. For every one of the players, it's a first All-Ireland title. There are tangible links to the county's glorious past through the presence in the team of the son of Tyrone's greatest ever player. And they've got two legendary ex-players sharing management duties and delivering the biggest prize in their first year in charge. Sounds like a hell of a story. So why is it that everybody seems to be talking about the losing team instead? Welcome to Monday's Second Captain's Podcast. Hi, Murph.
Hey, Owen. How's it going?
Hi, Ken. How are things?
Very, very good, Owen. And yourself?
Well, just fine. Thank you very much. You were at the game. You can correct me if I'm wrong. It seems to me that a lot of the narrative is about Mayo blowing their best ever chance, Aidan O'Shea getting abuse for not playing well, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably going to grind Tyrone gears, if their gears are capable of being ground today as they get used to life as All-Ireland champions. But yeah, I mean, so much of the reaction has focused around Mayo. They're the story again, for better or worse. And I suppose the story this time isn't of gallant failure, cruel, cosmic, bad fortune. This was just a really bad performance in an All-Ireland final. Possibly their worst All-Ireland final performance since, like, 2006, I would say. And to see that play out over the last couple of days, to see how public sympathy for them has curdled somewhat, that has actually been pretty interesting. You know, when they're losing to Jim McGuinness's Donegal in 2012, you know, that was a team that was just further along than them at the time. And actually, looking back at it now, you know, a team that history has shown were era-defining in their way. Or when they were losing to the best team of all time, losing these finals to the best team of all time, it was kind of easy to explain away and easy to kind of make excuses for them. But this Tyrone team, for all of their qualities, and they are numerous, you know, they're still beatable. You know, Tyrone played on, or I would say close to their potential. I thought it was like an excellent All-Ireland final performance from them. But Mayo, even playing poorly, were close enough to go and win the game anyway. They had four great goal chances and scored none. Tyrone had two half chances in the second half. I mean, half chances, and scored both of them. And that's the game. And that is the game. And it's obviously a very, very tough one for Mayo to take. But I mean, I don't know. Am I imagining this idea that public sympathy is running out for them?
I got the sense even immediately afterwards. I was listening on radio. I was after doing the Man United game on Premier Sports, and I was heading straight to a wedding. So it could be the first All-Ireland final I've ever listened to in full or near enough in full on the radio. And I heard all the post-match stuff. John Casey was on, and yeah, I did get the sense he wasn't hammering the team, calling them a disgrace or anything like that. But he was. It was really clear how hurt and angry he was. If that's the right phrase. He didn't use the word angry. He used the word hurt. So I suppose I'll go with that. But, you know, it seemed like that they find different ways to lose all Ireland finals, and this one did seem to stick in the craw of Mayo people. But I don't know, you might be talking more about everyone else around the country who usually sympathises at this point, or are you talking about people within Mayo or both?
No, I'm talking about people outside of Mayo. This unbelievable narrative of, you know, the last 10 years and all, everything that they've achieved and all these brilliant semi-final victories and all the rest. And, you know, I've always found it very easy to stick up for this Mayo team because they lost All-Ireland Finals to great teams and they played brilliantly in All-Ireland Finals. You know, like the 2017 performance is the best losing performance by a team ever, without a shadow of a doubt, you know. Probably 11 or 12 of the Mayo starting team played brilliantly on that day and it actually just wasn't enough. But, I mean, could you say that any Mayo player other than Lee Keegan really played up to scratch on Saturday? I mean, I thought Keegan was utterly magnificent. I thought he was absolutely brilliant again. But just so many others just did not come anywhere close to playing to their full potential. And obviously Aidan O'Shea is like the lightning rod for all of this. And this is kind of interesting to watch play out as well, because he's been getting, you know, plenty of online abuse, which is, of course, pretty shitty. But I just wonder about all these people decrying this online abuse and doing that decrying online. I mean, I just don't know how they think this is helping the situation. I mean, if you're a mate of Aidan's and you want to show him your support, you drop him a text. If you're not a mate of Aidan's, then your best wishes, or, you know, how dare they do this? I mean, it couldn't matter a damn.
So what? Is this the same pattern we've seen recently with, like, you know, there's a lot of, you know, oh, he's a bottler or whatever, and then people coming out saying, you know,
yeah,
don't.
Yeah, like he's achieved so much in the game, you know, like, and that's, right. Of course he has. Of course he's achieved plenty in the game. I mean, none of that matters a shite to Aidan O'Shea this morning, you know? Like, he knows himself. Like, all of that is just a complete sideshow, you know? Aidan O'Shea knows himself that too often on All Ireland final day, it hasn't happened for him. And Malachy Clerkin put it really well in the Irish Times today. There must be personal responsibility on O'Shea's side too. Not for the first time he's played badly in the biggest game of the year. He has to properly and honestly face up to why this happens. And that's it, you know? And like, again, this idea that, like, you know, online abuse is, you know, it's obviously an unbelievably shitty thing to go to. Losing 7 All-Ireland finals is worse. And losing an All-Ireland final when you've played badly is... And like, even... The O'Shea thing is weird, because I actually thought he did okay in the first half, but in the second half then, obviously, it just nothing went right for him. But again, it's, you know, like, I was having discussions with people sat around me in the stadium, you know, and, like, it ran the full gamut from, you know, oh, he's doing really well, to he should be off at halftime, you know? There's an element of it that doesn't help anyone. It certainly doesn't help Aidan O'Shea. It doesn't help Mayo that... You know, all of a sudden it's like it's being held against Horan then that he didn't take him off, having taken him off in the semi-final.
Yeah.
And, you know, it detracts from actually having a reckoning with what happened, you know? It's as if, okay, if we talk about Aidan O'Shea and we decry online abuse, it's like, okay, so that's that dealt with. You know, you actually have to sit down and think, you know, why is it that this keeps happening? You know, like, what can we do as management to help Aidan O'Shea in the next All-Ireland final? Or is there a decision to be made about Aidan O'Shea and his Mayo career? Like, there's just so much noise around Mayo all the time now that it gets harder and harder to analyse them coldly and cleanly. And, you know, like, the last couple of days has been... It's been weird in that respect, you know? Because, you know, obviously there's Brawley, you know, like, going off on one in the Sunday Indo... And, you know, like, I don't think many people are taking that overly seriously, but at the same time, there are...
What was he saying?
Oh, just, like, ad hominem attacks that you can go and read yourself. That, like, just mad stuff, you know? But at the same time, it's, you know...
Well, he's been saying it for a while, hasn't he? I mean, he's he's been kind of beating that drum for years, so it's natural, I suppose, that when they lose again in those circumstances, that he would take the opportunity to say, I was right.
The victory lap. Yeah. Yeah. And see, I think the frustrating thing for a lot of people is, you know, there is a discussion to be had about why Mayo keep losing these games, you know, and you do touch on mental fragility, and you have to do it now, you know, like, you could make excuses in the past, But you can't make excuses after Saturday evening, because that's a game they could have won. Like, leaving aside how badly a lot of their players played, they still had plenty of chances to win the game. And, you know, we realised that these games do hinge on vital moments, you know? And you miss a penalty, you don't even force the goalkeeper to make a save. Three other brilliant goal chances, like really proper chances, missed. And, you know, you're left with a long winter, I think, of recrimination.
Got an email in here with some recrimination, although this is from somebody from outside of Mayo.
I've got a call here that says, you're the most boring, predictable, condescending interviewer around. Go back to lecturing. You have the charisma of a sick bag.
Oh, God.
That's just it. I just mentioned, not you, no me. Okay, ain't nobody f***ing with my click, 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 click. Ain't nobody fresher than my mom. We don't normally click, broadcast all click, the stuff that click, comes from scum click, around the country. Click.
It's Tom who emails in talking about the scars of the past and making the point that actually the scars don't hurt enough. This is his summation of the problem. They know all too well, the Mayo players, that the sun will still rise the day after a beaten final. The Dolphins off Bell Mullet will still jump. The world will not end. It is not to belittle the commitment, the dark nights, cold early mornings, sacrifices, etc., etc. And it's not suggesting they don't care or they don't want to win. But there is safety in the collective. And not that they should be, but there is no danger this team will be pilloried. They're just another Mayo team that came off worst in a final. I don't know now, but I would say Aidan O'Shea is a sound man, balanced individual with a sense of perspective. You don't necessarily need to have a chip on your shoulder to lift Sam Maguire, but maybe it wouldn't hurt to have a bit of the psyche required to pin the abuse up on the dressing room wall before going out through the same wall the next year to show people a thing or two. And in your interview after the final whistle, having reached the mountaintop, being spiky enough disposition to grab the microphone and say, how do you like that, Joe Brawley? Well, it's Joe Brawley. What do you think of that? So just to get the wording right there. But this is all from Tom. First name only. As I enjoyed holidaying in Mayo this year and may wish to do so again sometime. So it's all a bit too easy for these Mayo players, Murph. They never have to win the All-Ireland because, sure, it's grand.
They're loved anyway, you know? I to be honest, I'm not sure, Tom. I'm not sure. I think it is still pretty tough to lose or to not win 7 All-Ireland finals in 10 years. I mean, that doesn't sound like an awful barrel of laughs as far as I'd be concerned. Maybe there is a point to the fact that, you know, they're still loaded, they're still loved more than any team by their own fans anywhere. Like, you know, they are adored, they are absolutely adored. But I think that has less to do with the low standards of, you know, the alleged by Tom low standards of Mayo fans who should be like, you're, you know, second, go full Al Davis, you know, just win, baby, second is nowhere. I mean, the fact of the matter is they have won a lot of very good games, they have played some great football, that's why their fans love them. It's not like a, you know, it's not like it's a transaction that it doesn't matter how good or bad the Mayo football team are, they will be loved regardless. I mean, that's not the case, you know. The fact of the matter is this Mayo football team is loved because they win a lot of games playing a lot of good football. Unfortunately, on Saturday we saw very little good football and no victory.
Oisin McConville and Paul Flynn have been mostly doing midweek gigs for World Service members this summer. Today we unleash them on all of you non-members too. Hopefully you'll agree when I repeatedly tell you, as I have done over this summer, that these are the best in the business. We've got a football podcast out now available for everybody. That's on Ronaldo's return and also the injury suffered by Harvey Elliott and why that was not just some freak accident, as Ken argues it. It was actually the logical conclusion of the new directive to let the game flow. The rest of the podcasts this week only available to World Service members. To become one of those, you have to go into secondcaptains.com. It only takes a couple of minutes, if that, and you can sign up if you're willing to pay €5 a month plus VAT to become part of this movement that we've been developing. Right now, let's get into the All-Ireland final.
Benny is my second captain.
Second captain. That's a humorous comedy show.
I saw that. Important men for my selection.
What is it all about?
There's no tennis, it's bold as a peak.
David Clifford! Dublin!
I love me county.
It's a dump.
We're going to do it.
Tyrone are All-Ireland champions for a fourth time and you couldn't begrudge them. That's right, isn't it, Armaz Oisin McConville?
You could hardly even get the words out yourself, so you can imagine how I. You can imagine how I feel.
Paul Flynn's with us. Paul, how are you?
Good to be here, lads. I'm very well.
Listen, I have to say, when we had the chat last week, Oisin, I was starting to be swayed towards Tyrone just because you were talking about the confidence coming out of the county. I don't know if that was specifically coming out of the camp. I think it was. But then also the people of Tyrone. And yeah, anyway, it turns out that confidence was justified.
Oh, yeah, it was justified in a big way, I think. The team did, like, one of the things I found amazing just coming up to the All-Ireland final was just how free they were as far as, you know, what they were sharing with the media, how they interacted with the media. There was no, they weren't being as truculent as they had tended to be for the last 10 decades, I suppose, more than that.
Yeah, but, when were you going to stop the clock running on that one?
But it, just their openness, I actually thought when I seen them lining up, I thought they looked more nervous than they had been. But the stuff in the weeks leading up to it seemed to bear fruit, and it seemed to, you know, go all the way into the game. I think 11 and a half minutes, and then it turned into a Tyrone game. I felt that it felt as if they dictated everything from that point on. They coughed up some goal chances and have done on a continuous basis all year. Just the precision and following something right through to the letter of the law. And to be honest, I thought in the end they had a good bit more quality than Mayo had up front. And they created probably enough chances to deserve to win the game. First time round, when I watched the game, I felt I got a false sense of it, and the reason for that was that I always kept feeling as if, right, there's a purple patch coming from Mayo. You know, okay, it'll be the water break. Nah, listen, you know, it took them to 63 minutes against Dublin before they really started to flow. And I kept waiting for that thing to happen, but there would never seem to be any flow or cohesion to what Mayo were doing. They were just bossed, and as I say, Tyrone dictated the terms of the game. And to be honest, when I watched it back second time, probably seemed a lot more comfortable than on first viewing, if I'm honest.
Yeah, and we'll get to Mayo in a minute, but I think it's important that we give Tyrone their due here, Paul. And you've spoken to us all summer about just how good Dublin have been in the past mentally, and how to get a team into that kind of frame of mind. And Tyrone's mentality was so good. Their conviction to deliver a performance that they could be proud of and see how far it got them from there. I just thought it was really, really impressive. They looked like a serious team that had come to do serious business.
Yeah, you said a really important word there in your statement slash question, which was performance. Like it was pretty clear that they were focused on performing, and they weren't focused on winning. And Mayo looked like they were anxious to win rather than focus on performing. And there's a big difference there. You're focusing on the here, the now, play by play. And Tyrone just gave that, you know, the signals of that right from the start. That it was just, this was all part of their plan. And it goes back to, like, you're right as well about the fact that I don't think everybody's probably not spoken enough about Tyrone. You know, we probably haven't given them enough credit for what they've actually been able to do in a fairly short period of time. I always feared Tyrone when I was playing. And there's a lot of similarities around the team that won this All-Ireland and that team, but just a little bit more on top this time round. They seem to have, like, really improved their culture. You know, that's epitomised through their work rate, which was always really there, but there's a real intent about it at the moment. And their selflessness, and that's all an attack. You know, their shot selection, getting the ball to the man in the best position, and their clarity on their game plan, like epitomised through that play which we've seen, which is, there's no doubt about it was a play. Niall Morgan's long kick out to box 11 to centre forward, unbelievable catch, quick transition from McKenna. That easily could have been like a Donegal who did that. Murphy tapping down to McHugh, quick transition, we've seen it before. And then to finish it off with such a, that's clarity on your game plan. That's trying to perform. That's not trying to win. You look at the matchups that they got right. Their key players were able to come out on top. You look at their use of the squads. you know, if we focus on Mayo, and this is contrasting, it really was important that key players played well, yes. Tyrone just seemed to have a team of 20-odd players that if you took anyone out, I don't know how much of a difference it would make. Maybe a little difference, but for the better. That reminds me of Dublin. It wasn't about individuals, it was about a collective. And their conditioning, right? Can we take a moment here and think about the moment where Colm Kilpatrick gets his top ripped off and he looks like an Olympic athlete in the middle of the pitch, a swimmer who's about to go and do 200-meter freestyle. Like that's Tyrone have had that because they've had exposure to a strength and conditioning coach who was involved with Ulster. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. Really top guy. And
Peter Donnelly,
apologies, yeah. And their training age is what you calculate, like how many sessions you've done in a gym under a proper strength and conditioning coach. You know, it, for many of these guys, it's 5, 6, maybe even more years. And that, like, has always been there. But it was really came to fruition on the biggest day. So I just want to go over the top. And we're definitely not going to get it from Ushin, right? But I'll give it, like, the credit to Tyrone for what they've done because they have been absolutely phenomenal this year. And they're a joy to watch as well. For such a defensively minded team, they're equally as focused on playing a really exciting and brand of attacking football, you know. So I just wanted to start off with that. Give them the credit that they definitely deserve.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, consider it. I started the show by asking why is everyone only talking about Mayo, and then up until now, we pretty much have only been talking about Mayo. So it's probably good, Paul, that you've got that in there for the Tyrone listeners.
Yeah, I mean, and it's worth making as well, Paul. They beat Donegal, Monaghan, Kerry, Mayo in a straight knockout championship. That is a proper All Ireland final run. Like that, brooks no argument.
No, absolutely not. And like obviously, they didn't play against Dublin, but you know, just on what we've seen this year, they would have beat the Dublin team that we've seen. You don't know that, but like you just have to base it off. This definitely wasn't, as in the words of, you know, some of our the pundits, this wasn't a soft All Ireland. You know, this was definitely a hard won All Ireland coming through Ulster. Any team coming through Ulster doesn't get anything easy.
Mayo don't want our sympathy, Oisín, so we're under no obligation to give it to them. This was an exceptional chance to win All Ireland. For all that we've talked about Tyrone, this was a very good chance for Mayo.
It was, and you know, as much as, you know, you could tear strips off, you know, some of the stuff that happened in the game, they still had, like, gilt-edge opportunities. We're not talking about goal, they're not talking about half chances, we're talking about real gilt-edge chances to make, to put a real hole in that Tyrone defence. They did it on numerous occasions, and could have easily finished up with at least 3, if not 4 goals. But I think, you know, going back to the Tyrone thing for just for 1 second, I mean, like it definitely is, as an Armagh man, it definitely is very, very difficult, you know, to throw out the plaudits. And the reason for that is that, look, you know, you grow up and you're it's bred into you from your, like, it is very parochial in the north. For anybody who doesn't know, you know, anything about, even, you know, within clubs and specifically within counties, but like I had mentioned after the semi-final that my respect was begrudging because, well, let's face it, I still need more therapy, obviously, but It was begrudging, but this time around, it was just more of a clinical edge to what they were doing, and you couldn't help or sit back and just go, this is a team that's well coached with a crowd of boys who are very coachable, obviously. I seen St Mary's win the Sigerson Cup with a lot of these players on it. And when they were doing that, they were coached to within an inch of their life, and they didn't play a game plan unsimilar to this. I think the big thing for me was that when I looked at that team with McShane, McGeary, Myler, lads like that in it, there's no way they would have won an All-Ireland without a collective approach. I would have said the same thing at the start of the year this year, that without a collective approach, they wouldn't have won in All-Ireland. And they were able to see that through right to the end. Nobody went off script, really. As in, you know, trying to do something special on their own. I felt everybody just conformed to what had been driven into them. I mean, you consider the amount of time that they've had to do that. I think they did, at times they've dispensed with certain things that they wanted to do. Like, you know, the kicking game probably wasn't as prevalent. But just take Myler's example, of the one that Myler kicked into McShane. I mean, normally, you know, under the previous regime, and that's not that, like, when I talk about the previous, doesn't seem like the previous regime, like, that it was rubbish or anything. It wasn't that. It was, it's just that when you get the opportunity to watch lads from afar, you're able to add on things, and I just felt that they were adding on things all the time, and a couple of the add-ons really worked for them. And sometimes you just got to put faith in a, one of your guys up front. They didn't sub McCurry at any stage this year. They put faith in him, and he repaid that faith. And you know, I know you want to talk about Mayo, but Tyrone, to have that to I felt as if we were watching a team that was progressing as they went along, and they won in All-Ireland, and I still felt as if this is a team that's learning on its feet. And probably because of the condensed season and the way things have gone for them, and you know, a management team in his first year and all those things, it that's the way it felt all along. And so there's probably more to come from them as well.
Just on that, and on the way they were managed, I did hear Fergal Logan post-match on radio on RT saying that he was kind of surprised at some of the coverage in advance. He effectively reckoned that his players were being underrated as footballers, you know, the quality of the group. And he thought straight away when he got in there that they had something really good. And he obviously, you don't shout that from the rooftops as a manager, because all you're doing is putting pressure on yourself. But he really thought these were players that could do something big, even if it was going to take a bit longer. But, you know, a lot of people are saying it's an amazing achievement to win it in the first year. At the same time, they've taken over, like, it never, they always stayed competitive in the Mickey Hart years. They never dropped below a point where they were somewhere around the top table. So in a lot of ways, you've taken over this group of really talented footballers who've probably, let's be fair, been with the same manager for too long, need to be refreshed,
yeah.
Just need a couple of new voices in there. In some ways, it's kind of a dream gig, really. I mean, I'm saying this now after they've won the All-Ireland, obviously. It could be revisionism on my part.
No, I would agree with most of that, Owen. I would say that was a team that needed a fresh approach, some fresh voices. As I say, that's not a criticism of the previous regime. That's just the reality of individuals and players. I played under the same manager for a lot of my club career and a lot of my inter-county career. And when a new manager came in, it wasn't that I felt, you know, this boy's going to be much better than the last one we had. It was more, you know, I'm excited to see what ideas the next person has. I'm excited to see, you know, you know, how different training's going to be, what the approach is. You know, is the next guy going to have us sitting in a room, you know, as much, you know, is it going to be more proactive? Are we going to be in the pitch more? All of those sort of things. What direction, you know, are we going? So I think that just has freshened it up. I think, you know, the condensed season, I felt it was going to kill them at one stage, and eventually probably did them absolutely no harm whatsoever. But I think, as I say, with a full league programme, with a proper structured championship next year, their team is just going to grow. And you see the individuals that they're bringing off the bench, and even the guys that they didn't bring off the bench, you know, again, you know, they're in a lovely position now. Their underage structures have been and always will be top notch. So they have a conveyor belt that's coming, and you know, it's not a numbers game with them. It's they are bringing through serious quality. All they need to do now is maybe get two or three from those under 20s and minor squads for the next number of years, and that's just going to augment what already is, you know, a serious group of individuals.
Paul, you said earlier that Mayo lost sight of the process. You felt that they were Just thinking about winning, which surprises me, given that they've been in it so often, they know the pitfalls at this stage. It amazes me that they'd fall into any of those traps again. But what did you see about their performance that makes you think along those lines?
Yeah, this is just looking in, right? So, you know, but it feels to me like we've said this in the show before, like that they're an emotional team. That they, you know, it was mentioned that they have purple patches, that they can, you know, react to maybe adversity quite well in games where they go 6 points down and then they just go on this like run of getting four or five scores in a row. And to me, why I felt that they were playing off their emotions a little bit at the end of the game was, you know, the shot selection. They were forcing things. They weren't, you know, sticking to their game plan. They weren't getting the ball to the man in the best position. And they had opportunities. You know, it wasn't a case that they weren't creating shots, and the quality of the shots that they were creating were poor, but that's partly down to the Tyrone press, but also just bad options and guys not being aware of what's going on around them. And that to me suggests that there's a slight bit of being emotionally overcome or emotionally hijacked is the term that's used, whereby the arena or the environment or the game can just get into your psyche a little bit and shut down your full use of your brain, and you make rash decisions. Yeah, and that can come in the form of lashing out, you know, which we've seen Mathieu Rouen. It can come in the form of taking pot shots. It can come in the form of trying to drive by three players when you're going to get turned over. And they did all these things, which kind of does suggest to me that they weren't focused on the game plan. And like, I know you can, I'm not feeling sorry for them at all, right? Because I don't think anybody and that team wants to be felt sorry for, right? But when I looked at James Horn at the end, I got a sense that and I could be wrong, right? But that he was saying, why did we not just play a game plan, right? Because that is definitely not what they prepared for, right? And what you said is, these guys have the experience. Have they not sat down and talked their way through this? Tactically, I think they have. I do question whether psychologically they are ready. They were ready for that game, you know. And I had a fear. We said it last week that was going to be when a game is down to the margins, when the two teams are so closely, you know, compared to one another, where the matchups look good, where they've kind of had a similar, you know, bit of experience in the panel and talent, the psychological piece becomes really, really significant. And I just thought Tyrone looked so comfortable throughout that whole game because they were sticking to their game plan, because they were ready for the event. And from Mayo's perspective, it just all looked a little bit, oh yeah, we were waiting for something to happen, but it just didn't look in control even from the start. And it really was more profound in the last quarter when you're seeing shots that were, everyone was nearly saying, what are you doing, you know? And they're just out of control. And, you know, when you think back, and the last thing I'll say more on this, because, and I don't mean to always bring things back to Dublin, but why you have to be this prepared mentally and tactically to play against a team like Tyrone is because it takes you into this red mist, is what they used to call it back in, when we referred to the Tyrone team back in 2008, is that they sucked you in, right? Because of their irritating work rate, they're niggling at you, their intensity. And you know, you have to just remain in control of the ball, because nothing can infuriate them more as if you're just going down one wing, recycling the ball, getting across the other wing, recycling the ball until you create a 1v1. And when you create a 1v1 with a player, we will always back ourselves to go at them, because that's why they sit around themselves with players, because they don't like being left vulnerable in a 1-on-1. And Mayo just didn't do that enough. They were going through, they weren't spreading the ball wide. They weren't in control of the possession. Didn't feel like it at all. Anytime anyone had the ball inside the 45, you're like, oh, they're not in control. And then they take pot shots. And they just, you have to have that control in your play against these teams. And control comes down to being tactically aware and being psychologically aware.
Yeah, see, this is interesting to me, Paul, because like if you talk about performance, you know, Mayo have performed in All-Ireland finals before. So it's not like they're incapable of performing in an All-Ireland final, because they've done it. So what was different this time from a mental point of view, do you think? Because like I do believe it's the hardest part of the game to analyse, as four guys sitting here on a Monday morning trying to analyse what happened on a Saturday evening. But it also, I think, was the difference in this game. So what was different in the build-up this time to other times? And basically, it's a roundabout way of me asking, could they not really handle the idea of going into a game as favourites or being expected to win, whether that's, you know, it was like a 52-48 game in a lot of people's minds, and it was in favour of Mayo. So it's not like they were overwhelming favourites, but it is a different pressure to what they had last year and a different pressure to what they had in 2017 and 2016 when they're going up against the best team of all time.
Yeah, I think, look, this is a very different team, first and foremost, right? And when we talk about, is this like the end of Mayo? I don't think so, right? I think this group, which we looked at on Saturday, are probably only starting, a lot of them are only starting their journey, right? You take out, what, Lee Keegan and Aidan O'Shea, and the rest of the guys are going to be there for a number of years. Maybe I'm missing one or two, but I think that a lot of them are coming from that minor and 21s team that were quite successful. So that's one part of it, that there isn't as much experience maybe as we you might think, right? The second thing is, I would bundle the idea of being favourites or not being favourites into letting the outside in, right? Into letting what's going on outside your camp into your camp, right? And we, if back to my Pat Gilroy days, like we were so focused on creating a bubble and putting a force field around it when it came up to, you know, anything in the when you get into All-Ireland series, and try to keep it for the whole season, whereby everybody outside of the camp wasn't talking about the same game you were, because they didn't know so much stuff. They were speculating about things that they thought could happen if this happened, and it, you know, that's all just speculating. And that's, for most of the people who are looking in and fans, that's the excitement about the match. That's even like what we love to do now, is to just, like us four guys here, talking absolute nonsense about what happened or what could happen, right? But the guys in the team, in the camp, they know certain things. They know their game plan. They know what the opposition are trying to do. And after that, that's all they should be focused on, right? And I just felt, like what you say about being favourites or not, you do feel that Mayo let that kind of stuff in, and the Tyrone are better just blocking it out. And I know Mushin is saying that they were open to Tyrone team, but like, we used to always kind of plant seeds and, you know, get information out there just to kind of distract and make it look like we were very comfortable with things. But yet we were concentrating on completely other things when we were in the camp. And yeah, that's letting the outside in, Murph. And I just feel Mayo find it very, very difficult to block themselves out. And why that, I don't know. I don't live in Mayo. You know, I don't know anyone who does live down there, you know, but I do hear that the pressure on these guys walking down the street is, you know, completely different. Like in Dublin, it's, you just get lost in the people, right? It's different in other counties. And Mayo seem to be so focused on this that they find it hard to keep the outsides from getting in into the camp.
What do you reckon, Ush? What's your take on this one? Because it does, as the point's been hinted at here, and Murph raised it earlier on when we were chatting amongst ourselves, that it feels like there's no sympathy for them, really. There's no sort of, oh no, poor Mayo, hard luck story. It's almost like everyone from the outside is like, you keep losing, and particularly in this case, you underperform, then at some point, the public in general kind of gets a bit fed up with the whole thing. What's the sense you're getting?
Yeah, I think there's a definitely an element to that, but I think that, you know, if you looked at those lads sitting on the field, I mean, I kept wondering was, on the way home on Saturday night, was what did they do now? Where did it go? Do you know what I mean? When do you come back out and face people and all that sort of thing? And I know that sounds ridiculous when you're talking about a game of football, but it's become an obsession now. And the reason why it's become an obsession is because they keep falling short. And I do feel sympathy for them. I do feel sympathy for them because, like, we were lucky enough to win in All Ireland, and when we won in All Ireland, I can look back and I can say hand on heart that everything that year more or less went the way we wanted it to go. We went through the whole year. We never as much as picked up a niggle along the way, which is, and sometimes things just need to run for you. We were the kick of a ball of winning another one, and things probably just didn't run for us. We didn't have, we, you know, we were missing one or two individuals. with Mayo, it just seems as if, you know, Paul's talking about letting the outside in, and it's almost feels when you visit Mayo that it's completely unavoidable, that it's just, you know, it's absolutely everywhere. And
That's the same for Tyrone, though. No, I mean, it's not like, you know, Tyrone is Dublin in terms of population size either.
Well, half the population of Tyrone probably aren't that interested, to be honest, Owen.
Yes, okay. Hopefully some of them getting more interested in recent years.
Have you ever been to Gavahi? The only people that go there are the people who are training there. You don't go there go there for the evening out. But it probably is. But that's why I just felt as if, you know, they dealt with it a little bit differently. This Tyrone regime is different to the last one. As I say, different. I didn't say better necessarily. It's just different. There seems to be a more enjoyable element to it. I don't think under the previous regime there would have been a few points after the Ulster semi-final or any of that sort of thing. Sounds like a small thing. I remember playing in an All-Ireland club final, and the week before it, our management, and one of them was a complete non-drinker, abstinent for the whole of his life, and they took us away to Wexford and they said, listen lads, yous are way too uptight. And we ended up having a few beers in Wexford. I actually didn't, because it took me long enough. This was a lot of years of my career. But it just lightened the mood. We came to train. We trained the next day again, and the mood seems to just have changed. I think they probably have a good feel for what's going on. And as I say, just how open the whole thing felt. And maybe that was just for the optics of it. I don't know, but how open the whole thing felt, but it just seems a lot more claustrophobic when you're talking about Mayo, and I think that's because of when the losses and the significant losses keep adding up. I mean, like, you know, Mayo people are not the only people who are talking about it in the lead up to the game. I don't know if that necessarily affected players, but I do think that a lot of the Mayo players, as opposed to Tyrone players, didn't perform, and there's always a reason for that, you know. And one of the reasons for that was that, you know, I don't know if their game plan was as clearly defined as Tyrone's was. In fact, I know it probably wasn't. And the other thing about it was that I felt that at one stage we're just, you know, you just feel as if one Mayo player just needs to grab it by the scruff of the neck. Lee Keegan did his utmost to try and achieve that, but that needed to be higher up the field, because that's where the majority of the mistakes were being made. Like, I thought the substitutions and the timing of the substitutions were poor, even right down to some of the personnel that was coming off the bench. Just I didn't see that coming, and maybe that was just a case of, listen, we're trying to inject something somewhere, but I just felt as if they never got any injection of anything, no momentum. You know, Tyrone killed the momentum, whereas Mayo, you know, when Tyrone were going well and were on top, you know, Mayo didn't have that in them just to kill it. You know, they wanted to just continue to play at this frantic pace and breakneck speed and get the ball to an area and then to have a go, and it ended up just not working out.
Yeah, I mean, you speak about momentum there, and these games are decided by, you know, key moments. And, you know, you've referenced it, I think, yourself, Oisin, earlier, but Mayo had four goal chances and scored none. Tyrone had two half chances in the second half and got both of them. And
I mean, missing a penalty in an All-Ireland, Murph.
But
that's unforgivable.
Missing the target.
See yous, lads.
I mean, it's not even 20 years ago, Oisin. We're still allowed. Yeah. But yeah, Paul, like, these are the moments that decide these big games, you know. And Tyrone scored only two scores in the first 25 minutes of the second half. They were both goals, you know. Like, you can't say that Tyrone were comfortable. And watching it the second time around, I was struck by the same thing that you were, Oisin, that they were actually in control of the game. But they were in control of the game because they took those chances. And Mayo had, for all that they played poorly, they had four brilliant goal chances and just couldn't do it.
I like it at the Tyrone. The Pam goal was a well worked goal rather than being a half chance. It was just a play.
Like when McKenna had the ball, that's a half chance, and he did magnificently to find. Oh, absolutely! I mean, the goal was brilliantly created, but you know, Mayo were back. It took a piece of brilliance by McKenna to find McCurry hand pass the goal.
I know what you mean, but with the Mayo, like, yeah, like a penalty in an All Ireland final. Look, these are tiny margins, right? But that goes in. The game is different, even with everything that we just said. The game is different. When they didn't score and Tyrone started building their lead, they then dropped off. They gave the kick out. These are all the little things that layer onto it. They gave away the kick out. Remember we spoke last week about kicking to the half back line rather than kicking to the cornerback. Henley started kicking to the cornerback then, right? And so they weren't trying to engage any Tyrone players. And when the transitions were that bit slower, they were so set that it was so hard to break them down. They were never going to get a goal, or they were never going to create good scoring chances. You're right, into Tyrone's, I think, their shot to score ratio was hovering around the 50% mark. Mayo's was around 37. Like, they are really, really low, right, stats. And put that into perspective, when Tyrone, I know the Tyrone stats from 2008, because that was what we were going after in as a part of the 2011 team. But when they won the All-Ireland 2008, I think their season tally was around 56%. Was their shot, the score ratio. And we won an All-Ireland 2011, and it was between that 55 to 60 range. When we were in All-Ireland under Jim Gavin at the end, it was at 80%. 80% playing against set defence week in, week out. So that's the difference. Like, Tyrone's was excellent against Kerry. Wasn't as good the last day. Mayo's was really poor, right? But the moments of the game, the goal chances, again, they're going back to, and I don't want to muddy the water between technical and tactical and psychological, right? But they were nearly all psychological issues, right? If you look at Tommy Conroy's chance, they call him Tommy Goals in Mayo, do they? That's the nickname for him. Did he rush it? Probably. But young lad, though, in fairness to him, and did well to create the opportunity. But like, if he had cool head there, he probably would have either taken an extra step or, you know, worked a better opportunity. The penalty, you know, penalties, Oisín would probably give you a better, I'm not a penalty taker, I probably would have done, his penalty was a lot better than the penalty I probably would have taken. So, but again, that's for cool heads. That's for, you know, slot in the corner. He didn't do it. And well, so, and
Paul, like the,
they are the yeah, big
the,
moments.
The Brian Walsh goal chance is a guy refusing to hit a chance with his left foot in an All-Ireland final. Like, it's a skill error in that, you know, he doesn't have, he's not in a position to be able to back himself in an All-Ireland final to hit with his weaker foot. But it's also a mental error, because he has to read the situation and go, well, whether my left foot's a swinger or not, I have to hit it on my left foot because I don't have the time to hit on my right foot. And that's just, it's the sort of thing that loses an All-Ireland final, and you can't have a sympathy for a team that loses an All-Ireland final with an error, with a specific error like that, I feel.
Yeah, and when I say I don't have any sympathy for them, I do, of course, have sympathy for them, right? But I don't think...
I don't think they want
sympathy, right? They just need to learn from these things. And, you know, they are deficiencies in skill acquisition, if you like, right? They are deficiencies in the ability to kick off both feet. I do question, like, on totality of the season, looking back, how much teams spend focused on this. You know, I think Tyrone were very comfortable on the ball. Like, skills look good, you know, all over the pitch. They all just look comfortable on the ball. They could get themselves out of tight spots pretty easily. You know, it just looked like they focused on that. We focus so much on the basic skills, right hand, left hand, right foot, left foot. You would look at some sessions and say, no, that's not the Dublin senior football team. That's like an under 14 team in a club. Are they seriously doing those drills? But that was... Jim was fixated on skill acquisition. You've got to be really proficient on both sides of your body. And, you know, on things like that, on that opportunity where he blazed it with the outside of his right boot, going in on the left foot, yeah.
Sorry, this is the one in the first half that Conor Loftus got onto the rebound then, and that was saved on the line as well.
Yes, yes, no, no, yeah. Sorry. But an opportunity in the second half as well, coming in on the right wing, where he blazed it with the right hand, right outside of the right boot wide, on the near side. Sorry, mixing them up. That one leg maybe was still, it was still probably the right play with the outside of the right boot. It was just bad execution. But these are the things that, you know, they come natural in big games when you've just absolutely saturated yourself in it for a whole season, you know, and you're just so comfortable with it. And I just wonder how much they're saturating themselves in the basic skills of the game, in their tactics, and the other one, which I think we've over-egged now, being mentally prepared for these moments.
O'Shane, do you want a word on the penalty, all joking aside, on the penalty miss?
Yeah, I've just never seen him do the studded run-up before. I've seen him kick a couple of penalties. Actually seen him, believe it or not, play for Belmullet a couple of times as well. Football takes you everywhere. But anyhow, I just never seen him. I really like Ryan O'Donoghue. And the reason why I like him is because he tries things. And I think there's space for somebody like that in a team. He tries things just the same way as the Myler situation into the thing. Like, it's trying things, and then it's the boys are talking about how you execute it, and you know, he just didn't execute it properly. But I like him. I think he's, you know, if they are going to win the All-Ireland, it's going to be around somebody like him, or certainly he's going to have a massive part to play in that. But I missed a penalty in the All-Ireland final, and honestly, if it had been the second half of the game, I was done and dusted. But luckily enough, we had half time at 15 minutes to get my head together and go out in the second half and actually take something out of the game. But if it had happened in the second half like him, I definitely would not have recovered from it.
Yeah, well, I know the
little thing on that, O'Shane, is like, and you're right, I agree with everything you say about O'Donoghue. He put in a fine shift other than that, and his work rate all season and all them good things. Penalties are different now, O'Shane. Like, they're closer to the goal. You were taking yours from the 14-yard line where they were difficult to score penalties. They're big opportunities in the current game where there's so many defensive structures. All you've got is, you know, they're so important that you score them. You know, they really, really are. When opportunities come along like that, you got to take them. And
I actually sat in the committee that changed the rule from the penalty, because they had looked at the raw stats, and it was down below 50% of the penalties were being converted, and since they've moved it in, I mean, I think it's up around 75%, maybe 80%. So yeah, it is. It's a much easier opportunity than it once was. And thanks for getting me out of jail and that one, Paul. We're friends for life, kid.
it's only taken all summer, but now the arguments have stopped, and you're both firm friends. Oh, just on the point you made about wanting someone to grab it by the scruff of the neck, somebody other than just Lee Keegan. Obviously, Aidan O'Shea is the guy that Mayo fans would wanted to do that. Didn't happen for him. A lot of people are saying it doesn't happen often enough for him in All-Ireland finals. If you try to take some of the emotion out of that, and like, he's been getting kind of pilloried online, and then there's been this counter movement against the online abuse. If you just can take that out of your head, does he underperform in All-Ireland finals? And if so, why do you think that is?
Honestly, I thought even going into the All-Ireland final that Mayo would turn the tables and give him a specific job to do, as in maybe an individual, as in maybe a Kennedy or something like that, and turn the tables on it rather than him being hunted all the time. It's difficult for him now, because you know, when you continue to underperform in finals. But like, I certainly don't think, you know, that's for the lack of work rate or the lack of endeavour or wanting to do the right thing. But I think it sort of, on Sunday, I felt as if a lot of the confidence drained from him when he missed the goal chance, you know, or he didn't do the right thing for the goal chance. I thought, you know, you're the strongest lad playing the game of Gaelic football, you know, you got to throw McNamee out of your way and just play on with that ball and bury it. And he had a shot in the first half as well, which went wide. And the confidence seemed to drain away from him. He's after being taken off, you know, in the semi-final, the biggest game that Mayo have played in a long, long time, and probably went into it maybe a little bit under a cloud. But I always feel as if
Ian O'Shea. Like, I don't think that people can Mayo people, whoever. I don't really think you can question him on what he's trying to do, but I think you can question him on his ability to do that. I think he's, I've said this, we have said this, lads, on the podcast for 10 years. I still feel as if a definitive role would suit Aidan O'Shea. Like, he looks as if he's a lad floating around in the wilderness sometimes, and he gets caught, you know, on the back foot a lot of the time, you know. And I just think Croke Park is unforgiving in a way, in that, you know, there's so many open spaces, and if you get them one on one, you know, they went past them a couple of times. So, but I think people, if they want to, you know, troll back through all the videos of all Ireland finals, they'll see that, you know, there was nothing wrong with the work rate and endeavour and what he's trying to do. I just think that the execution of that does certainly let him down at times, and I think that let him down again at the weekend, because I think if he sticks that ball in the back of net, we're talking about a different player then, you know.
Paul?
Yeah, and he is a confidence player. But remember, as like when you play in the early provincial rounds, when you can dominate teams, he always plays well because they probably don't have anyone to match up with him. Once you get to, you know, the more serious end of the season, he is on. When any team does an opposition analysis and they identify who are the three guys that we want to shut down, just decommission them out of the game, just sacrifice one of our guys to make sure that they don't have any impact in the game. Every time he's on that list. Because it's such a momentum swinger for the opposition if he just doesn't play well. And Tyrone have been masters of that for the whole season, and they were able to do that. And it is difficult. Trust me, you know, being that guy where, you know, there's someone just there and all they want to do is stop you playing. It's difficult, right, if there's someone tagging you like that. I'd also say too that, like, you just don't know about when it gets to this age, he certainly has chronic injuries that are just niggling away, and the types of things that you can't see to the naked eye when you look in, right? But like things like backs, groins, hips, just, and big unit like him, like they just start to give way, right? So you can't continue to do the repeated sprint ability that's required to get space in these, in particular, these tight encounters. So that strikes me as two things that, like, I'd like empathize with him on. He has had a phenomenal career, right? This guy, you know, doesn't need to be questioned too much, but he just hasn't been able to deliver in these big games when someone is tagging him. And I do think that he's a confidence player.
He should be able to deliver though, right, Paul? Like, I mean, he's sort of an iconic player in the game. And, you know, with that status, I would have thought, of course, in any sport, with that status goes the attention you're talking about. And the truly great ones find a way to still dominate a game. And I don't think anyone can remember any, like, really dominant 70-minute performance from him in an All-Ireland final.
Yeah, and that's, look, I'm not denying that. All I'm saying is, like, just, you know, he probably gets a lot of attention as being, which brings you into the category that he is one of those guys, and maybe he just isn't, you know. And the point I was going to make was that on what O'Shea said in relation to, or sorry, maybe it was more that he floats a little bit, right?
Yeah, he sometimes ends up floats around the game, yeah.
Not having clarity on what it is your role is, it becomes a big issue as the games get bigger, right? And I personally was always a much better player when I knew exactly what my role was. Some guys are, they're in these, you know, categories like a Jack McCaffrey, right? I just play guys I know because I don't know some of them. But like, you know, like a Jack McCaffrey or even, you know, some other players like a Paul Mannion are very comfortable in the, you know, in the kind of chaos, let's say, right? Whereas I was always much better in the structure and the order, right? Whereby, okay, here's my role, I'm going to execute this really, really well, I'm not going to show any mad flair, but I'm just going to keep doing what I'm supposed to do, right? And I was able to do that quite well. I get a sense he's more of that type of player, right? But people want to pitch him in the player of the flair type of category. And when you get into the big games, if you don't know what your game plan is, if you don't know what your role for the overall team is, clearly you won't have an impact. Whereas if you're one of the Jack McCaffreys or a Mannion, you don't have to do a hell of a lot for the whole game. You just have to have five or six moments of absolute magic, and that's you done your job. And I think that we have, as analysts or as people watching in, categorise him as this flair type of player, which I actually think he's much more of a structured type of player that needs that defined role within the team. And that becomes an issue in the big games, and maybe that's what we've seen with Aidan O'Shea.
Could be. All right, guys, we've been talking for 45 minutes. We better wrap up and get this podcast out so everyone can listen to it. Listen, it's been amazing today and been absolutely brilliant all summer as well. It's had its moments. So listen, thanks so much to Oisin and Paul. Brilliant stuff.
Thanks, lads.
Thanks, guys.
Give us a break. Give us a break. For God's sake, that team deserves something like...
Killian O'Connor. He hasn't missed a free all day. Killian shoots. He's hooked it away to the left and wide.
Congratulations also go to Galway today on winning the All-Ireland Camogie final yesterday. They were put to the pin of their collar there. Murph 3 points down against Cork at one stage, but they outscored them late on. From the point they were 3 points down, from the stage of the match where they were 3 points down, they outscored them heavily to win the game.
Yeah, it was the reaction to the Cork goal actually that won the game. And it was a really good Camogie final, one of the best I've seen actually in the last kind of 10 or 15 years. And yeah, I kind of got the impression throughout the game that Galway were slightly the better team. And then when Cork got the goal, it was like, yeah, maybe it might have been a case where Galway had their chances and actually should have been further ahead at that stage. But the reaction after that was just absolutely brilliant. And the points from McGrath at the end, the two points from distance at the end, put the tin hat in it. But it was a really, really good final. And that's Galway's second in three years now. So time for us to go back-to-back. Let's start building a dynasty here. Aoife Donoghue was brilliant. Niamh Kilkenny, Sarah Dervin. These are names that are not unfamiliar over the last 7 or 8 years. And it's no surprise that they were as good as they were again, but they were exceptional.
Their manager did his TV interview afterwards. It feels like it's been a while since Gaelic Games was great, but the real fast talker. There have been some good ones over the years, but I thought the well might have dried up on this one until I heard this from Cathal Murray.
It's about consistency and getting to these All-Ireland finals, you know. That's what we want, you know. Look at these girls, are heroes. They always are. Unbelievable game of Camogie, I thought. I think it's a brilliant advertisement. Look at the girls who worked incredibly hard. As I said, it's just unbelievable.
Whoa. That is fast. Is it Kerry levels of fast talking, though?
Oh yeah, it was great. We know, to be fair, look, as I said, the other interviews, well, like, we weren't getting ahead of ourselves. Like, they're only, it's probably still in holiday mode as well, like, but it's always great to beat the Dubs at home. I've known Peterson Smyne as well, and he's a great manager, and Donny come in, lifts everything, and Tommy and Jays, but we want to put a great performance, and most importantly a passion as well, to show them we want the jersey, like.
See, that's fast in a different way. Cathal Murray was fast and excitable post All-Ireland. That Kerry clip is fast while keeping a lid on the hype. I'm not actually entirely sure who that is. That's one we have in the archives from a couple of years ago. If you can identify that exact Kerry player, then
I'm going to say Micheál Burns. That's my guess. I think it was Micheál Burns, but I'm more than happy to be corrected on that one. I mean, I'm sorry, but Cathal Murray didn't sound that fast to me. I mean, is it just that the Galway accent means that...
That's what we want, you know?
You know, I can just understand. I don't have to, like, be listening very carefully to understand what he's saying.
He was going along in a fair clip, Murph.
That's just an excited Galway man.
Go on, get on. I think it's a brilliant advertisement.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap things up for today. I know you want to talk about the tennis, Ken. Perhaps we'll have to do that during the week. You were spellbound by events at Flushing Meadows.
I did see the women's final.
Yeah. Yeah,
but you weren't flabbergasted.
Which is more is that the word than, that you are, said? Than you are with a lot of the...
It was more tennis than I've watched in a, yeah. More tennis than I've watched in a while. I will say that.
Britain's first billion pound athlete, is that what they're saying, that Emma is going to be?
I mean, I did see just at the, was it yesterday I saw, and obviously just thinking, like, obviously this is an insanely marketable, talented, brilliant sports person. And then I saw that she speaks fluent Chinese. And she sent a message on Twitter to, like, all of her Chinese fans. And I was like, yeah, this girl has a lot of major media markets pretty nicely sewed up here, I have to say. $1 billion. Let's not put a limit on it, on, you know? Why just limit it to just $1 billion?
True.
Pretty spectacular, unbelievable performance by her on Saturday night.
Poor old Novak beaten last night, I'm sure. We're all going to shed a tear on that one. Thanks, Murph.
Thanks, Owen. Thanks, Ken.
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you, Kieran.
Thanks for listening. We'll chat to you during the week. If you're a World Service member, take care. Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah, it was great. We know, to be fair, look, as I said, the other interview as well, like, we weren't getting ahead of ourselves. Like, they're only, it's probably still in holiday mode as well, like, but it's always great to beat the Dubs at home. I've known Peterson Smyne as well, and he's a great manager, and Donny come in, lifts everything, and Tommy and Jays, but we just want to make, we want to put a great performance, and most importantly, a passion as well, to show them we want to.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys. It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.